Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. European football is back and Iker Casillas hangs up his gloves. It's Thursday the 6th of August. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Pete Donaldson.
Well, after a minuscule, 24-hour break in the football calendar, we now have a festival on the way. Yeah. 26 European games in the space of around 19 days. I'm quite excited about this, actually, because I feel like even though we had that really long period with the Premier League and the games being on near enough every day and obviously the Championship being back and all the excitement of the playoffs, I feel like this really is the replacement for the Euros now, because there's nothing better than like a knockout kind of competition in the summer, is there?
Absolutely. And that was the last worst 22 and a half hours of my life or whatever it was. But it's over now. And it feels like we're being eased into it a little bit, doesn't it? Because some of these games, of course, are pretty throwaway, like the Manchester United one. I think Kate described it yesterday as a quite annoying game to have to play or something along those lines. And it's absolutely right. I'm sure Bayern feel the same about Chelsea. before playing them at the weekend. But some of these games have loads riding on them. And already we've got to those games in the Europa League where the first leg didn't take place in the last 16 tie. So it's a one-off on neutral territory, which I think is pretty exciting.
There's your weird Super League. This is what it's going to look like. I hope you're happy. What a sad little life, Jane.
The decorum of a reversing dump truck. The best. Well, let's talk about the Europa League returning last night. As you say, Andy, the first game to talk about really is that slightly pointless Manchester United LASK match, which finished 2-1, so 7-1 win on aggregate. No surprise, really, that United are through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, and the problem is with this, I'll watch the highlights of it later, but I started with good intentions of watching Inter Getafe on the main screen and having United LASK on the iPad. And you know what? Because, like you said, Jules, you feel that compulsion to watch sport the whole bloody time now. I was like, this is a waste of time.
I'm going to play Peggle.
I feel this is a waste of time. I stuck the NBA on my second screen. In
did you?
Because it actually counts. It actually counts.
Yeah.
What was happening in that?
They're on Disneyland rides.
Well, yeah, they've been doing a lot of water slides, haven't they, and stuff on their day off.
Well, that sounds fun.
It is fun.
I'll get involved in some of that.
Are they not running any of the actual mechanical rides for the gigantic men of the NBA?
I don't think so.
Can you be too high to ride rides?
Well, I mean my...
I'm normally not tall enough.
Yeah, I don't know, tall hat.
I don't know if you're big bouffant. Your head scrapes a cloud or Magic Mountain or something like that. I mean, my kids were saying the other day that I mean, they obviously love the idea of being stuck in a closed tournament bubble at Disney.
Oh,
I mean, maybe this is something they could do for the Europa League to liven it up next year. But like they were saying, you know, Dad, for the teams that are eliminated, so the teams that didn't get invited because they had no chance of making the playoffs, so like Golden State Warriors, New York Knicks, Atlanta Hawks, et cetera, they were saying they should invite them for a day to play on the rides with the other people because they don't feel they should be left out.
That is the best sports-based suggestion I've heard all month, quite frankly.
And that's what it's all about, isn't it? Communion at the moment.
It is. It's about pulling together and eating a lot of bloody candy floss, quite frankly.
Getting
a pizza that's in the shape of Mickey Mouse's head.
Yes.
Which hopefully they're getting.
I remember the last time I went to theme park in America, you get those huge legs of meat. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like in a medieval kind of...
Because
they love medieval kind of...
giant...
Really?
Do you not know what I mean?
No.
Not really?
You just walk on Disneyland again.
The way you're looking at me...
Really. Like you're crazy.
Trust me. You can buy... I don't know what meat it is. I can't remember. I should know. But it's basically you just buy a giant leg and you just walk around with this huge piece of meat on a stick.
That to me doesn't feel
away.
Very family friendly.
No.
But you're walking about like a Neanderthal around loads of kids going, I want something's flesh.
Yeah. And most of the animals are like, you know, they're walking around as animals. You got mice, you got... It could have been Goofy's leg.
You know, Raphael Honigstein once told me that when he went to Disney with his family, that in the main restaurant there, like when you finish your dinner, there's like a gutter in the middle where the waiters take away the food and scrape it off into this gutter.
Right.
It sounded the most rank thing.
That's got to go straight into... They're probably using it for like pig feed or something like that. Do they have pigs in Disneyland? I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, they must have livestock, surely.
Probably.
Where do they get the legs for you to chop on?
Exactly.
Like a monster.
Anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed it. let's talk about the football then from last night. There's a few little side stories in the Manchester United game. First of all, I think that the team that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer put out, there was some conversations around whether or not anyone would play their way into the starting 11 for the next game, which will be the quarterfinal against Copenhagen. And whether or not any of those players that he gave a chance last night could get themselves into the starting 11 for the quarterfinal. Do you think any of them did, Andy? What do you think of Jesse Lingard's performance? Because he seemed to be the one people were talking about.
It was good, but I wouldn't have thought there was anyone who really presented an overwhelming case to be put in. I mean, even if they'd have won 5-0, how can you judge anything on a game like this? Because... No, it's just basically a cruise through. Of course, LASK came to play for Brighton. I thought they did that pretty well.
That a great goal, wasn't it?
It was amazing. And, you know, they had a pretty difficult end to the season because they were top of the Austrian league. And then basically they trained when you weren't allowed to because of coronavirus restrictions, collectively trained.
Right.
They got docked a load of points.
Naughty.
Fell off the top of the league. And they never really recovered from that. And Valerian Ishmael, the former, I always call him former Crystal Palace legend. I call him that because he played four games for Crystal Palace. He had by far his worst one against Wimbledon, which helped them win 3-0 at Selhurst Park against Palace at the time. Anyway, he was really good for Bayern and Werder Bremen as
went
as
on
well.
To better things.
He did indeed. But he ended up getting sacked. So they had a different coach for the second leg than they did for the first leg. But really, it's all about the fact that United just had to, as Kate was saying, sort of had to fulfill this clause, really, of playing this game. I think the biggest take home from this, and yeah, it's nice that we can see Lingard, who I understand has had quite a difficult time personally, to get to play again, and maybe to get some minutes later in the competition, because as you say, it's going to be a lot of a turnover of games if they go further pretty quickly. I think the biggest take home from this is the fact that Başakşehir didn't make it into the quarterfinal with them, because that's the one that I think a lot of us would have expected. They've just become the champions of Turkey, and Copenhagen, it's of course they're experienced in European competition, but United are looking at that and saying yes please.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's two legs they could. That's at least one leg they can.
Not my meat leg.
They can grease their way through that leg.
Another thing is that we saw Mengzi get his debut last night for Manchester United. And I know that a lot of United fans are really excited to see more youngsters getting their opportunity in the first team. 8 academy graduates have now made their first team debut this season alone, which is quite extraordinary, actually.
And it's a massive deal for Manchester United. I mean, bear in mind that when they got rid of Danny Welbeck, even though the sporting decision to get rid of Danny Welbeck was a pretty sound one at the time, there was quite a lot of angst from a lot of United fans in that we need someone from Manchester in our team. It is an absolutely huge deal to them.
Especially because their neighbours are very different in their makeup.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, so as we said, Manchester United are going to play Copenhagen in the quarter final. Can you see United going all the way in this competition, Pete?
Yeah, I really can. I really can. I mean, who would you sort of say would
Wolves
be getting
will be difficult for them if they can meet in the semi final, can't they?
They can. I tend to think it will be a Sevilla United semi, which would be like immense, I think, because it's Sevilla's competition, isn't it? Really, they're a team that's very, very good in this competition. They've changed the history of it, and they've had a really good season as well. They were terrific after the resumption, and that's the thing. When you look at the form of teams, you can only really go back to June, really, can't you? And work on this little mini sample, but they've been terrific. Julen Lopetegui's really revived his reputation. Now, I think that would be a really Sorry to go back to the meat again, but meaty final, semi-final to get our teeth into. Even though obviously a lot of people are hoping for the Wolves United one.
I'm backing into.
Are you?
Yeah.
So they won last night as well, 2-0 over Getafe. They play Leverkusen or Rangers in their quarterfinal. That match is tonight, and Leverkusen take a 3-1 lead into that one from the first leg. Leverkusen are going to get through, aren't they? They'll play Inter.
Yeah, they should do. And I think the interesting thing about the way this tournament's been realigned is the fact that Leverkusen are basically almost playing at home. If they end up getting to the final, it's like 15 minutes down the road from them in Cologne. So it's a really great opportunity for them. As stands, they've still got Kai Havertz, which is quite a big deal. And they're called Leverkusen in Germany for a reason, because they haven't won a title since 1992. So for them to win a trophy is a really big deal. But I take Pete's point about Inter, absolutely, because they were really scruffy for the first 25-30 minutes of this game against Getafe, who we know can make it difficult, and they're right sort of... There's no other word apart from shithouses, really. That is what they're like. They are difficult.
Euro shithouses.
They very much are that. And, Inter, I think, kept their nerve, especially with all the stuff that's gone on with Antonio Conte in recent days, with speculation
over
his future. All
and
the time.
So tanned as well.
No, that's fury.
I've never seen a tan.
Yeah, exactly.
He's gone so red, he's gone blue.
The thing I loved so much about his rant after their game against Atalanta, which is given...
Did you just say rant?
I did say.
That was really posh.
Rant. I thought you said run.
Rant.
Run, rant.
That was the poshest way of saying his rant.
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 I'm super posh, Andy Brussels.
I'm not from the north. I'm simply not from the north. I know you guys have both got that covered today.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Happy Jamaican Independence Day, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you very much. It's also my mum and dad's wedding anniversary today. They didn't plan that.
That's a coincidence.
Just a coincidence.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. The thing I like so much about Antonio Conte's outburst.
There we go.
Is that on the end of it, he knew what people were going to say. So when he said, oh, the club and the directors have dumped a ton of shit on me and the players and all this sort of stuff, they came out and said, look, it's nothing to do with transfers, because that was going to be the first comeback. Yeah. And he can't say it's anything to do with transfers because they've given him really everything he wants. I mean, you know, you look at Lukaku's opening goal against Getafe, which is of extremely high quality. He's 30th of the season. He's had just such a brilliant season. Then Christian Eriksen comes on to score one later, which is an ultimate luxury. You look at the fact that Alexis Sanchez
is signed now, which
is not a cheap deal by any stretch of the imagination. The fact that they've already got Ashraf Hakimi for next season. He can't complain about what they've given him. But you have to respect his commitment to find something to have a row about.
Well, he did. He in most of his jobs, he's sort of won something in the first season or so, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So this it's not unknown for him to. I really do think Inter Milan will win that particular competition.
How do you summarise Inter season though, Andy? Because it's been, from what I've been reading from the Inter fans, is that they're actually disappointed that they didn't give Juventus more of a title race, because in the end, obviously, they only finished a point behind Juve in the league.
But that's because Juve eased up in the last couple of games.
They did. Yeah. They did. But you sense that they see this as an opportunity missed this season.
Yeah, I think so, because there's a feeling that Juventus were weaker than in previous seasons under Maurizio Sarri, and I think that's fair. I think really the biggest achievement of Sarri's season is that, you know, Juventus brought him in so they would be more entertaining. I don't think they intended by being more entertaining by conceding more goals and losing more games, but that's the way it turned out in the end. But I think the bit that did for Inter really was just before, I suppose you could say, either side of the hiatus. They just dropped a few points, and especially at the start of 2020, a few too many draws that sort of got them like sort of pulled back by the pack, really. But like Pete was saying, you expect Conte to work his magic in that first season and get them to the title somehow, and it didn't quite happen. And I guess people look at Juventus and look at their habits and the way they run and think, well, they're not going to allow anyone this close again for a while, which, I mean, we don't really know in this environment. And before they buy players, they're going to have to flog a few, because they've got this absolutely heinous wage bill that they can't really support in this current environment. In fact, they couldn't support in the previous environment. So they've got a little bit of work to do. But I understand when a team like Juventus or Bayern have a close scrape, everyone does have that gulp and think, oh shit, they're not going to let anyone get close again for a while.
Yeah, well, we'd probably say then in agreement in this room that Inter, Manchester United, probably the two favourites for the competition. But what about the others? How much of a chance do we give Wolves? They, of course, face Olympiacos tonight. It was a 1-1 draw in the first leg of this one. And a shout out to Wolves and Nuno for this season, which started 379 days ago.
That's,
oh my God.
Too long.
It's ridiculous.
That is empirically too long.
It's incredible, really, when you think about
how
many games they've had to play this season to get to this point, and it's still not over. Mm.
And they're still in there with a chance as well. That's the amazing thing. I mean, I think because of the size of Wolves' squad, as Pete was saying, you did expect them to get to that when you go through Europa League qualifiers. You expect them to get to that wall in like November, December. And they're like, yeah, we can't. You know, the bottom drops out of it physically. But they are so well conditioned. It's unbelievable. I mean, are they the fittest team in the Premier League? They can't be far off, right?
Mm.
Bit of luck as well, though. I mean, that goes a long way. Bit of luck. So
yeah,
I just said it really quick. I get a lot of blank faces when I'm in shops. Can I have a Coke, please? A Coca-Cola. I'm sorry.
Olympiacos knocked Arsenal out in the previous round.
Yeah.
They'll take a lot of joy knocking out another Premier League team. What is it about other teams in Europe just getting that extra bit of buzz knocking out a Premier League team?
Well, I think it's slightly different as well when you go to like an Emirates or something like that. I mean, like Olympiacos were, you know, that they were partying in the corridors. I was at the Emirates that night, and they were partying in the corridors for like an hour afterwards. They absolutely loved it.
Brilliant.
But that they were really good that night. I think Olympiacos quite underrated under Pedro Martins, their Portuguese coach. They've come back to a point where you expect them to be the dominant team in Greece, and they haven't been for a couple of years. And they've won the league with something to spare this time. They've got good experience in there, which I think is something that really matters as well. So I don't think Wolves can take anything for granted. I would expect them just about to get through this, because you talked about them winning at Arsenal. That was the moment that I thought, wow, Arteta's got a job here, because that was an Unai Emery Arsenal type performance that they gave that night. But you know, obviously Arsenal have come quite such a long way since then. It's a different issue. But you know, Olympiacos are relatively reliable in Europe. I don't think you take them for granted at all. If you think like going all that time back to what October, you know, they could have won at Spurs as well in the Champions League. You know, they're winning there by a couple of goals before Spurs came back. So. Not to be taken for granted.
Also, Sevilla-Roma, you've already talked, Andy, about Sevilla will be quite a threat in this competition if they face Manchester United in the semi-final.
Yeah.
They take on Roma tonight. They've won the competition 5 times in the last 15 years. What do you give Roma's chances of beating them, though?
I think it's going to be tough for Roma. I mean, they've got quite a young team pinned together by a few experienced players, like Edin Dzeko. Chris Smalling obviously was one of those, and he's gone back now, which is a massive blow to them, I think, because he obviously wanted to stay as much as Roma wanted to keep him. And in fact, one of the Roma directors said when him and Zappacosta went back, you know, we loved working with you guys, and hopefully we'll get to work with you again in the future. Obviously knowing that something's going to happen, because Roma have been taken over this morning. The club's been sold,
right?
This morning it's finally been bought by the Friedkin group, so they're hoping to have a few more quid, because they've been suffering a bit financially over the last little while. For this tie, though, I do think there's too big a gap.
It does get quite exciting, this last bit of the Europa League, doesn't it? Because the Europa League as a competition is quite often criticised, isn't it? Oh, no one wants to play in the Europa League. Oh, you've got to start your season so early. But actually, when it gets to this kind of stage and further on into it, it gets really exciting. There's some really good teams in it, Pete.
Well, especially this time around as well, there's just more focus on it. And we are gagging for more football inexplicably.
Yeah.
Even though we've had a big football... I say dump, like a data blast. A data blast of football for
I've definitely not had a big football dump.
Let's talk a bit about something off the pitch, something that's always quite nice to see. Unlikely friendships formed in football. And I call it an unlikely friendship, even though they are teammates. Dejan Lovren and Mo Salah.
Right.
I've got a bit of a bromance going on.
What's happening?
They just love each other so much. And I feel like, I don't know whether I just missed this over the last, how long they played together? 3 seasons Mo Salah's been at Liverpool now. Lovren's been there, was there for 5 seasons. I didn't know about this until Lovren's left.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were best mates.
It's sort of Dear John letters. We've got to break up. I'll see you soon.
I know. It's quite cute, really, isn't it?
I quite enjoyed their FaceTiming. It was it was on the Zenit social media, wasn't it? When
why did they choose to film that? It looked a bit set up to me.
It's rather intrusive, I thought,
yeah.
on what can only be described as an intimate moment. But that bit where Lovren goes, you know, Mo, I was at the airport. And do you know who's waiting as well behind all the fans? A bear. And I was like, really?
Yeah, there wasn't.
Really?
There wasn't a bloody bear.
Somebody could have brought a bear along.
What, a fake one?
Well, no, just a you know, somebody, if you own a bear, you're showing it off. Every time there's a little holiday sort of party up in Highgate, the guy who owns a reindeer inexplicably turns it up with it.
The guy owns a reindeer?
Yeah, and he turns up with it and the kids look at it. I haven't seen him in a few years, to be fair, so... Maybe it died.
Oh, God.
Maybe it's now sausages. Maybe
the guy died.
Maybe the guy died.
And the reindeer lives in a massive house in Highgate,
yes!
All on his own.
Lovely old
he's,
God.
He's sitting there watching Europa League, smoking cigarettes, drinking high-class whiskey.
I'd love to see, I'd love to see a reindeer, full antlers, with a cigarette on every end. Like the Maurizio Sarri.
Oh, what, like when Joe Perry's playing live with
yes!
Aerosmith?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lauren also commented on Mo Salah's new hair. haircut. He does look quite different with less of a fro, doesn't he?
It reminds me of, I'm going to bring in wrestling here, they tried to make Ric Flair in the early 90s look younger by giving him like a ball cut, but he always looked like a 50-year-old man, and it just made him look older. So I think it just makes him look older, to be honest.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I think he looks quite sharp.
Yeah.
He was complaining about how expensive his haircut was. I'd love to know how much it was. How much do you pay for your haircut, Andy? Are you an expensive haircut man, or are you a cheap barber's boy?
Are you a cheap barber's boy?
Somewhere in the middle. I don't want to sell myself out and sort of put myself forward to be like caned on social media for my
and you've got a really
over
nice
the top grooming habits.
Taking food out your kids' mouths for your fancy do.
It's funny. Actually, I get a slightly better haircut than I pay for,
right?
Because the gentleman, hello Miguel, who used to run
Miguel
the,
Delaney.
Miguel Delaney does haircuts.
Wow.
Who used to run the salon at the end of my street. He went freelance and he just goes to people's houses and
freelance barber.
Absolute boss move. Boss move.
And you get to watch telly while he's cutting your hair.
You get to watch a bit of NBA. Turn over the television, my girl.
Pete, is yours a DIY job?
How dare you? How dare you? Just because I criticised you.
My
weird meat. Is that a keto diet? I don't know. It's a caveman diet, isn't it? Yeah. Just to criticise your weird caveman.
How much did this bleach job cost you then?
The bleach job cost me £7 from boots that I did myself.
There we
because
go.
Because I was getting into kind of man bun territory. And then I went to Mr. Topper's and I paid £10 for a haircut. And it's cash only. And
not very pandemic friendly, is it?
Always dodgy.
And Mr. Topper's is very on the level, I have to say. So they always get a good tip. So I always give them a five a tip because it's Mr. Topper's, and you those kind of systems, they've just got spare chairs, don't they? You sit down and you lay out all your stuff. But there's new rules of Mr. Topper's. You can't put your mobile phone on the side. You can't set up your NBA iPad to watch.
Your tip's nearly as expensive as the actual job.
I know, yeah, I did. And I did those myself.
It's very kind of you.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
The interesting thing is that lockdown has made me feel like I want a haircut every day. You know, like
right,
footballers,
yeah.
Have their haircut all the time.
Yeah.
If you've ever spent any time in like footballers' hotels or anything like that, they're always getting their haircut.
I've spent a lot of time in hotel rooms with footballs, but like on their shoulder, have they always got like little bits of hair on their shoulders? Like, you know, like, you know, when you get your haircut and you've always got like hairs just get everywhere, don't they?
I thought you were talking about having a lot of body hair.
Oh, no. No, God, no. Hairless. Footballers are hairless, aren't they? Every last one of them.
They wax a lot.
Apparently, that was quite an undertaking for Luis Figo because
really?
Him, who's obviously a very glamorous man and his very glamorous wife, they did an advertising campaign for, I think it was Calvin Klein many years ago. And despite Portuguese gentlemen generally being quite hirsute.
Yeah.
All the focus group said it was too much.
Yeah.
He had to get waxed.
Too much hair.
And that must have hurt, man.
I'm not a fan of a rug.
Who got
I'm so sorry.
Who got the, like, did they do it all in one kind of, like, put? I'm just ignoring that nonsense over there. But, like, did they pull the whole suit off in one? Does somebody own that suit in full? Like a big...
hairy suit?
Yeah, big hairy suit. Like a big Sasquatch suit that you could put on, wear around.
I don't know, but I would love to believe that's the case.
Yeah.
Right, I'm fantastic. Crying. It's time for a break.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You're listening to the Football Ramble this Thursday with me, Jules. I'm here with Andy Brassel and Pete Donaldson. Now, there was quite a big news story yesterday in the Premier League. Arsenal yesterday became the first Premier League club to announce major job losses. Let me just summarise exactly where this story is at today. So despite a 12.5% pay cut from Mikel Arteta and the Arsenal's first team players back in April, as well as the executive team waiving more than a third of their wages over the next 12 months, the club say they're now facing more significant and longer lasting reductions in their revenue than they all hoped. So the club are now planning to make 55 members of staff redundant. Those redundancies will come in all three of these departments: football, commercial and administration, but with the majority coming in the commercial and administration departments. Guys, we know how seriously and severely the coronavirus pandemic has affected all sorts of businesses financially. And we've been talking for months now about the impact the break in football and the change in circumstances will have on football clubs up and down the football pyramid. But when this was announced yesterday, was it just that little bit more surprising, Pete, because it's a Premier League club?
Because it's a Premier League club that I think PR-wise kind of trades off being a big community invested club. And obviously, you know, every advert for Arsenal is this kind of, you know, you've got Wrighty in a double-breasted suit strolling down Holloway Road, and you've got, you know, kids dripping in the club shop, you know, outside Casey's Chicken on Holloway Road going, you know, we're N7, we are, you know, we are the Arsenal, we're not like the others. So it is disappointing to see members of the community losing their jobs. And, you know, they're owned by Stan Kroenke, and people have very, very strong opinions, particularly the people of St. Louis, who obviously lost a franchise not that long ago after being very successful. Stan Kroenke's company came back into the after taking taking the team away and leaving the community with a fairly hefty tax bill. He sort of set up some kind of regeneration project and asked for tax breaks on that as well. He is a businessman. That's how big business kind of works. You don't become a man worth $10 billion easily. Well, you do. You marry into it, which is what he did. But you go to Aspen in Colorado and meet a woman at a ski resort. That's how you... But what I'm saying is, I don't know what Arsenal's specific situation is, but in many businesses, I think PR-wise, execs, income on an executive level, the salary cuts, salary isn't the biggest part of their income. It's stock and it's shares and stuff like that. So I see where the footballers and Arsenal's footballers in point why they're annoyed about taking that 12.5% pay cut, and then seeing so many staff being cut. Execs in a lot of companies, and I'm not saying this is an Arsenal situation, but execs in a lot of companies, ITV have done it, and the people who are on the Mirror, the Prudential, I think, as well. They take their pay cut because they saw what happened in 2009 and what a big PR loss it was to retain a massive salary as a CEO or a CFO or a big earner at a organization. They take their pay cuts, but there are, you know, incentive based stock agreements that come into play, you know, 5 years down the line once the market has recovered. So I'd be less sort of interested in what the executive kind of branch of Arsenal are doing, but I would be, if I was a footballer and I've taken a 12.5% pay cut, in the grand scheme of things, not a huge outlay when it comes to, you know, a club like Arsenal, and then seeing all of the colleagues that I've worked with for the past 5 years being chucked.
It's a dreadful look. I don't think there's any getting away from that. But I think there's kind of two sides of this. Firstly, it really puts Mesut Ozil's decision not to take the cut into perspective, because as someone, I think some people have looked at this the wrong way around, just that he's tight, he wants to sit on his massive contract, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas that's never the reality. Mm. I think, like a lot of footballers out there, he wants to know that if he's giving something up, he wants to know where it's going. Mm. I think there's quite a load of self-determination involved in that. And as someone who is experienced in being a philanthropist and giving a lot to good causes and charitable projects, he wants to know where the money's going, which
I don't
think is unreasonable.
There's a level of trust, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it needs to be there.
Clearly that trust has been breached for a lot of those players who feel they've given something up and it's not gone to help the people they thought they would. But, you know, there are two sides of this, because, of course, there are the people who absolutely should be protected, like the stadium staff, the match day staff. Mm. And I'm not saying anyone who's getting made redundant deserves it. But I think from just getting away from the community aspect of it, the thing that I think should worry most Arsenal fans is the fact that basically getting rid of a huge part of the scouting department because they're going to an agent-led recruitment model. Yeah. Now, I know some people will defend their club to the ends of the earth no matter what they're doing. And, you know, I know this is something you've thought about quite a lot with the Newcastle United thing recently, Pete. But the response that I've seen from some Arsenal fans on social media would have said, oh, well, this is how you sign players these days. It's agents. It's not scouting. It's like, come on, man.
It's not how you make any money. You don't sign players cheap doing that.
No. And the idea that like, you know, it's the only way you get top players. It's like, well, are Arsenal really getting any A-plus elite players nowadays anyway?
No.
With the position they're in? No, they're not, a start. They have to be smarter. And just letting your agents do the scouting for you is just a money drain. It's crazy.
What you're referring to there, Andy, just to be specific, is that one of the people supposedly losing their job is the head of international scouting, Francis Cajigal, and also Peter Clark, who's head of UK scouting, and Brian McDermott are also reported to be amongst those losing their jobs. With regards to Francis, he'd been at the club for 2 decades. He found the likes of Cesc Fabregas, Hector Bellerin and Martinelli as well. So as you say, they're losing a huge part of the club, as well as all of the other members of staff that you've already mentioned.
And you've got to be smart with the sort of budgetary constraints that Arsenal are saying that they have to run the business nowadays. I mean, if you're an Arsenal fan, who do you want? Maybe it's a bit simplistic boiling it down to these two players, but do you want a Martinelli or do you want a Willian? I'm not saying Willian's not a great player. Like the guys were saying yesterday, you know, he's still a terrific Premier League player, but investing that much in
a 31-year-old, 31?
Yeah. Okay. It seems like a luxury they can ill afford at this moment in time.
Is modern football just built on different metrics nowadays? You know, image and marketing deals and stuff like that. Does that not come into it a little bit more so that they can play
more than sporting success? Like, yeah. You mean? Well, there's an argument for that, isn't there?
Mm.
But I don't know. If I was an Arsenal fan, I would be more and more concerned about that. I would be more and more concerned that maybe the sporting success of this operation doesn't really matter to the owners.
But that's been leveled at the owners before, and it is sad, but I do think anybody who is working for any company needs to be cognizant of the fact, I think, that big business, and I'm not saying this is what Arsenal are doing, that they will be making decisions that they've wanted to do for a very long time under this cloud of making tough decisions under COVID.
Yeah.
Companies do this all the time, and that's how I'm constantly surprised why we regard football as being kind of somehow different to every other business. I happen to believe it is because they do sell, we do sell our clubs as being a community kind of a process hub. And a community hub for everyone. But I'd never understand why that. Well, I do understand it, but it's because there's a lot of young black millionaires kicking a football around. I think that's kind of why that hits the front page. That's why that sticks in the craw, because they're making all of that money, and there's so much money in the game. You know, who are the guys signing the checks? They're the guys who've got all the cash, as Chris Rock once very interestingly pointed out. So yeah, it's only, I think the stink that's getting kicked up about Arsenal right now is a positive one, simply because other teams will find it more difficult to do it. Aston Villa at the start of the COVID epidemic basically said, we will have to make changes, and that is understandable with a club at their level. But I would say that I think they did a study in like 2016, 2017, and they sort of worked out that most Premier League clubs would make still a tidy and handsome profit if they played no matches in front of anybody. If they just, you know, went on TV revenue and stuff like that, because TV is such a big part of the game.
Well, the Arsenal fans have had their say. In a statement, the Arsenal Supporters Trust said that it had hoped the players' wages cuts would be used to ensure all Arsenal staff are looked after in these difficult times. The statement also added that it would be contacting the club to make sure that the staff let go are given as much support as possible. Andy, I remember earlier on in the season, right at the start of the pandemic, when Spurs and Liverpool reversed their controversial decisions due to their fans protesting fiercely against putting their non-playing staff on furlough. That was then reversed, wasn't it? Mm. Can you see the same thing happening here with Arsenal if the fans disagree with it?
I would hope so. I would really hope so. I think that would be a really positive thing. And I think we've seen that for the first time, actually, and we talk about stuff being done under the cover of pandemic, and I think Pete's quite right to point out, I think something that has been quite positive, not just footballers showing determination in terms of what they want to do for philanthropy and charity and giving back to the community, but that fans have started to realize the power they've got, and that's something that we've seen a couple of times. I'd love it if Arsenal fans had their say continually and the club reacted to that. In terms of the scouting department going, that's clearly something that they wanted to do anyway. I don't think that's really gonna affect that, you know, and like I said, I would find that quite hard to live with as a fan. I think that's very risk inherent, and it wouldn't make me feel good about the sporting future of the club. But personally speaking, as a fan, I think the way the club behaves in the community and to its employees in terms of looking after them, in terms of helping them through this difficult time, is just as important as what happens in a sporting sense.
All right. Well, I'm sure this is just the beginning of this story. So we move from that and to the end of someone's story in football. And that's Iker Casillas, an absolute legend of the game, was announced this week that he's retiring. He's hanging up his gloves. 725 appearances for Real Madrid over 16 years. He won 3 Champions Leagues, 5 La Liga titles. He also won the World Cup in 2010, and he won the Euros twice, 2008 and 2012. Quite an incredible story, particularly after his health issues last year.
No wonder he's got them, blimmin' heck.
Yeah.
That is a job.
It is. He hasn't played since April 2019 when he suffered a heart attack, and he was a coach at the club too. Mm. An incredible career, and I mean, wow, what a guy. What a guy.
Yeah, and he's just so loved everywhere. It's interesting, actually. I think we remember so many of the absolute elite high points of his career. Like, you know, I think you think of him helping Real Madrid to win the Champions League in really unusual circumstances in 2002 when he was still a kid at Hampden Park against Leverkusen, and so many other great moments. I think Miguel Delaney, actually, in between cutting hair, pointed out earlier this week about how he was the key player of the 2010 World Cup final. Yeah. Those saves from Robben were absolutely key. We think of the beauty of the Iniesta goal, but you know, Spain really chipped their way to that world champion title, didn't they, in 2010? And he was an absolutely massive part of that just before Jose Mourinho started to take his career to bits. But I think the interesting thing to me as well is that obviously it's not been so widely reported because he's been in Portugal, but how he's kind of rebuilt the bottom end of his reputation in Portugal, because I think a lot of people think, well, he's just going there to retire. But it's clear that the fire never really went out there. I mean, for the first year and a half, like, people looked at him as everything that was wrong with Porto, because he was brought in as the most highly paid player in the history of the club. And people were like, well, Porto doesn't do this. You're meant to buy young players and build them up and sell them on for huge profits. Yeah, exactly.
It's not that's what we come to football.
Exactly. And he ended up there because of his relationship with Julian Lopetegui, who'd been his goalkeeping coach for the Spanish national team. And you know, he made one or two errors that like people made a big song and dance over. And you know, you're always putting yourself in an invidious position if you're someone like him going to a league like that, because there are only probably four games of the league season against Benfica and Sporting in which people are going to actually judge your performances. And the rest, you know, you might as well be standing there smoking a cigar for all anyone really cares. And the fact that he put himself out there in a situation where it was so easy for him to fail and to be held up as a symbol of failure, and he received a lot of criticism early on for his pay, for the politics of the club, which were nothing to do with him. And yet he came back and performed brilliantly in all the big matches. Like, I think of a couple of Clásicos against Benfica where he was the outstanding player. And the fact that he built that reputation, the fact that he's loved so much at Porto, and when they won the cup to complete the double last weekend, it was him who was on the pitch to co-lift the trophy as well. They invited him along because he's still part of it. You know, he really touched people there. You know, they really feel he's someone very special. And obviously he's going back and working with Real Madrid now. And it wouldn't surprise me if he was a Real Madrid lifer. But if he wanted to go back to Porto in some sort of admin capacity, they would have him in a flash. There's no doubt about that. You know, he's someone who's as important off the pitch as he is on it.
Yeah, you talk about that trophy lift after winning the Portuguese Cup with Porto just last week against Benfica. That's just one of a few trophy lifts that we've already mentioned. When you look at his kind of catalogue of photos, Pete, of all these different trophy lifts.
The conga lines.
Just amazing. An absolute legend of the game. And you know you're a legend when you then receive plaudits from Messi. There's a lovely statement that Messi said. He said, "You're a spectacular goalkeeper and it was really hard to have you as an opponent. But looking back, I also think that it was a pretty nice rivalry that made us have to outdo ourselves every time we faced each other." When you hear the greats of the game talk about each other like that, it's just amazing, isn't it?
He said the status of a legend, as a legend of the game, was secured long ago. That was the only bit I actually read. I was like, that's a bit damning with faint praise, isn't it? Look, he was a legend long ago. Let's not talk about him now.
Not enough of talking about him.
Really, you could argue he was like the Messi of goalkeepers in a way. I mean, I know people will look at a few errors like the 2014 Champions League final, and it tends to be that last impressions rather than first impressions last when it comes to football players. But you can forget how incredible he was. The fact that he was not sort of so physically imposing as like a Schmeichel or a Buffon, but so incredibly dexterous. I think that's something that marked him out. For me, he's one of the very best. And you know, he's held in such esteem in Spain that, like, if you did we joked about it a couple of weeks ago, if you did a poll in Marca to say who should be the starting goalkeeper for the national team, there's still like 60% of people who would vote for him. There's no doubt about it. But if you can hear that sound in the background, it's Jose Mourinho rowing back furiously after he says, "Look, I know we had our problems, but basically I don't want to look like a dreadful person. Yeah. So let's meet up and have a little chat sometime." Casillas is going, "Yeah, I look forward to gritting my teeth while I shake your hand at a UEFA event."
Where does he rank, Andy, for you in terms of best goalkeepers of his generation? Is he up there?
Yeah, it's close. I mean, same generation as Buffon, of course. And I think because Buffon carried on with Juventus for so many years, he tends to get the nod. Very different styles of goalkeeper, but yeah, Casillas, a big match goalkeeper, no doubt about it.
Would you say he was a more modern kind of facilitation of what a goalkeeper represents? Rather than
Buffon? Maybe, because I think one of the things actually that sort of marked his downfall is the fact that he moved away from being strong on crosses. He wasn't really one of those goalkeepers. And actually people criticised as he kind of changed his style to a more punching style. I think the problem, actually one of the reasonable problems that Mourinho had with him is that he wasn't dominant enough, really,
right,
in some ways. So maybe the fact that he tried to evolve and change, it sort of affects the way we look at him. But like I said, I think the fact that he regenerated himself in those final years, especially in an environment where you can't make any mistakes, you can't give points away in the Portuguese league or you're not going to win it, basically. And he went on to reinvent himself and become really important in those last couple of years.
And he posted a picture on his Instagram page just to summarise in one statement and one photo what his career means to him. And this is what he wrote. The important thing is the path you travel and the people who accompany you, not the destination to which it takes you. I think I can say without hesitation that it has been the path and the dream destination.
Oh, chills.
Like it.
Oh. It's emotional, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Got a tear there.
Yes, I have.
Did he couple that with a background of sunset in the Instagram?
It's actually a really arty picture of him leaving the stadium.
Oh, imagine if he messed it up. It was like Jorge Campos doing an overhead kick. He'd be like, why have you you posted the wrong picture, Iker? You absolutely muffed this right up, mate.
You've got to give it to the right team, mate. Imagine, you pass it to Alex Telles and he's like, oh, sorry, Iker, I've just taken your feet.
Boys, that's it for today. Andy, you're back tomorrow. You're going to be previewing the Champions League return.
Yes.
Man City, Real Madrid tomorrow night.
All the excitement. No Sergio Ramos though.
I know, and I'm going to be at the Etihad for that.
Really?
I'm very excited for a European game.
Are you going to be a couple of seats away from Sergio Ramos? Because of course the last time...
I will make sure I am.
The last time he was in the crowd at a Champions League knockout game, he was having a documentary done, wasn't he? Because they'd won away at Ajax. And he got booked right at the end thinking, oh yeah, I'll just take the second leg off. Which of course they ended up getting hammered in. And it was part of his Amazon documentary, wasn't it? This didn't go as we thought.
It wouldn't be the first time I've photobombed a football documentary. I was actually in the back of the shot of the Barcelona one.
Yes!
Really?
Literally so awkwardly. I was just doing a pitch side here, one of these Champions League games.
So we've tolerated Vish giving it the big one that he's in the Spurs one when you were in the Barcelona one.
I've never mentioned it before, but yeah, I'll try and get in the back shot of that if I can.
Do something weird, like smoke a big cigar or something. get a hooker pipe out.
Because of the...
Just an arm of meat, really.
Play
your normal game.
I'm going to have to stop on the services on the way up there and try and find something just, as close to it
just
as possible.
Pile into a field and sacrifice an animal.
Welcome Breaker, well known for their hog roasts.
Jules, by the way, last time we worked together, you were complaining that your water bottle tasted of curry. You have a different water bottle today. Have you sacrificed said water bottle? Is it in the bin?
No, but I washed it a lot of times.
Does it still...
No, it actually doesn't taste of curry anymore.
Oh,
but
I
tell you what happened is this is the world we're living in now because like I'm not really going into coffee shops and stuff at the moment. Mm. My mug, my travel mug that's meant to be watertight is not watertight, guys.
Lethal.
So the other day I got tea all over me in the car. So I ended up throwing that mug, not out the window. I really wanted to.
It makes it
really
sound like in anger.
It's like, fuck you! A closed window. Just that's like, made it worse.
Hits a cyclist.
So the curry water bottle is now my tea mug.
Right.
And this one is now my
your water
bottle.
Lovely.
Clever, eh?
Nice.
Clever.
Well, you wouldn't mind a bit of curry in your tea. It works.
No thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Very flavoursome. Bit of lapsang.
Pete, have a good day, mate. Marcus and Luke and Andy will be here tomorrow for another ramble. See you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.